shine. Stay with it. Hang on. Engage. Disengage.
The Grand Rapids Area Chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness is hosting a free presentation, Cracked, Not Broken, the Kevin Hines story, that's coming up this Monday, September 27th at 7 o'clock at the Ives Theater at the Rife Center. Kevin Hines survived a jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. Now he is helping others avoid suicide. That happened in September of 2000. Kevin Hines joins us now. Thanks for being here, Kevin.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
So, Kevin, what was going on in your life before September 2000?
Well, you know, in order to trace back what led me to what I did, we have to start at the very beginning. I was born into severe poverty. I was born into biological parents who, after they had me and my brother, were on drugs and alcohol. And they died very young, very tragically. And my brother and I were taken from them physically by foster care, by Child Protective Services, and placed into foster care. And even in the first few months of my life, I was very sick because I was fed what my mom and dad could steal. Kool-Aid, Coca-Cola, and sour milk was my first diet. So I was very ill from a very young age. My brother died in foster care right near me. And I immediately developed a detachment disorder from reality and abandonment issues that follow me until today. And so that was my beginning. And so I began life in a really rough place. But unlike my poor brother, I got really lucky. I landed in a good foster home, and I was adopted by a second foster home, and that's my mom and dad, Pat and Debbie Hines. And they saved my life initially. And I really thought growing up, you know, how could anything go sideways from here? But then at 17 and a half, everything came crumbling down, and I was diagnosed with the same brain disease both my biological parents had for me. They called it back then manic depression. They call it today bipolar disorder. I would be triply diagnosed with the same disease in my life. And that's what would lead me to the Golden Gate Bridge at 19 to attempt to take my life in a way that is 99% fatal. 99% of the people who leap off that bridge in the last 85 years of being open never again get to tell their stories. They're gone forever. So I'm just grateful to be anywhere. I'm grateful to exist, period. And so after my attempt, after my survival, as a matter of fact, a sea lion came to my aid in the water under the bridge and kept me afloat until the Coast Guard boat arrived behind me, which was just miraculous. After that happened, I gained a great amount of perspective on life, and I saw life differently. And my appreciation for every waking moment is palpable. It's very real. I don't take anything or anyone for granted anymore. I've been given this gift of a second chance at life, and I figure if I've been given this gift, then I have to share it.
So, Kevin, take us through that day. Was this planned or is this spontaneous?
Well, you know, I had been having suicidal ideations for some time. I had been self-loathing in the mirror every day, looking at the man in the mirror and hating what I saw. I was in desperate, lethal emotional pain, certainly. But the actual compulsion to attempt, and I say compulsion and not decision because it wasn't a decision. I never decided I wanted to die. I believed I had to. Those are two categorically different things. When I was compelled to die on my hands, it was only the day before my attempt on the 24th of September was the day that I believed that I had no other option, like I had no other choice. The furthest thing from the truth, suicide is never the solution to our problems. It is the problem. But I couldn't see that. I couldn't recognize that. And that's what led me to the Golden Gate Bridge that day, and that's what led me to jump off. But the millisecond my hands left that rail, and this is the important part of the story. The millisecond my hands left that rail, I had an instantaneous regret for my actions and this 100% recognition that I just made the greatest mistake of my life and it was too late. It was devastating.
So that's a tough one. You talk to other people, I'm sure, through your career about who have attempted to take their life and probably had the same thing go on, that they knew it was a bad decision immediately. Why is that? Why isn't that decision in your head prior to that?
Right, exactly. So the reason it's like that is because before you attempt to take your life, you're in so much lethal emotional pain. Let me make it easy for you. Answer this next question. Answer it audibly. What is the one thing you want to happen when you find yourself in excruciating physical pain? What do you want that pain to do?
Go away.
Go away. Right. That's physical pain. Brain pain goes so far unnoticed that it's nearly 300,000 times worse than any physical pain we've ever experienced, because people don't believe it's real. People brush us off and say, snap out of it, get over it, move on, what's wrong with you? And so we fear being judged, so we keep our mouths shut about our pain. We bury and silence our pain. So many people around the world silence their pain, and there's no reason for that. A pain shared becomes a pain halved. And so what people recognize in the moment where they think it's too late is that their thoughts don't have to become their actions. That's what happened to me. That instant regret came because I recognized my thoughts didn't have to own, rule, or define what I do next, but I thought it was too late. Now, I got to survive. I got the blessing and the gift of surviving. What I did, which is, as I said before, 99% fatal, why did I get to live, you know? Why did I get to survive? Maybe, just maybe, it's to spread this message of hope right around the world like I've been doing for the last 21 years. It was only 7 months after my attempt, I had my first presentation in front of my old 7th and 8th grade class. And I really believe, what am I doing here? Who is this going to help? Why am I doing this? Well, I ended up getting 120 letters in the mail from 120 kids, and several of them were actively suicidal. Because they were minors under the age of 18, their letters were screened, and they were given the mental health they needed, and they're alive today. And so it was that moment that I found that out, that I realized I have to do this. And my father read the letters. He said, Kevin, we have to do this however, wherever, and whenever possible. And we never stopped. And pre-COVID, I was thankfully speaking 300 plus days a year, sharing my story, trying to help people be here tomorrow and every day after that.
I lost my daughter to suicide 8 years ago, and you know, it's like a piece of my soul went away, but I didn't understand what mental health, mental illness meant. I mean, we all think we do. And you know, she was struggling at the time, and she was got on some medication after numerous attempts to get on the right medication. And I was just ignorant. I just thought, well, now she's on medication. She'll maybe go to a movie tonight and things will be fine. So that's the ignorance I experienced. And that's the biggest thing that pains me today is the ignorance. I did not know. And even if I did know, I don't know if I could have saved her. But you mentioned, you mentioned your jump, and there are many people out there who feel that by talking about this, other people are going to want to do this. And I know that's kind of crazy, but people feel like you're glamorizing it. And someone might say, oh, gosh, maybe I should do that and get attention or whatever. What are your thoughts on that? What have you experienced through your 22 years of talking to all different ages of people?
Thank you for asking that question. I appreciate that, first of all. I'm sorry for the loss of your daughter, by the way. I'm terribly sorry for your incredible loss. It means the world that you're having me on this show and talking about this. No. If we don't talk about it, how can we stop it?
Yep.
If you don't name something, how can you get in the way of it? The fact is that the idea that talking about it is dangerous is a myth.
Yep.
It's a myth in the sense that, if you sensationalize it and all you talk about is sensationalism and the jump and the hit and the fall and all that stuff, that can be dangerous. If you talk about how you attempted and how you found, live, and stay in recovery, like I do around the world, that actually builds sticky memories within the brain. And with the neuroplasticity of the brain, it can help save lives. I've been doing this work for 21 years, roughly. And I can tell you that I haven't lost one person. I've been effective in helping people do the work to save and change their own lives. And I've gotten hundreds of thousands of letters, emails, Facebook messages, Instagram messages, etc., from people all around the world that say that this story saved their life. And I don't own that. I don't say I've saved lives. I'm a conduit. I share a story that has an effect, and people go home and they do the work and they save and change their own lives. But the fact is that catalyst had to come from somewhere. And so, no, it doesn't put the thought in someone's mind if they're not already thinking about it. But if you don't ask the question of someone in mental pain, are you thinking of killing yourself? Have you made plans to take your life? And do you have the means? You're doing them and yourself a disservice. And that, if you didn't know about that, it's not your fault if someone passed away. My dad didn't ask me those questions. It's not his fault what happened that day. It's not his fault by a long shot at all, period. And it's no one's fault in my family or my friend group or my acquaintances. People didn't know how I was really feeling because I buried it and I silenced my pain. So two things. If we can get people who are struggling mentally to unburden themselves and share their pain because the pain shared because the pain has, and if we can get the people that are doing mentally well regularly ask the questions, are you thinking of killing yourself? Have you made plans to take your life? Or do you have the means? We could save a lot more lives.
We're talking to Kevin Hines. He's going to be in Grand Rapids coming up on Monday, September 27th. His presentation is free. It's called Cracked, Not Broken, The Kevin Hines Story. He's also got a documentary out, Suicide, The Ripple Effect. So, Kevin, it must, you know, your mental, your pain that caused you to make that jump probably didn't go away. How do you keep yourself healthy now?
Great question. So you can find out how I keep myself healthy on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kevin Hines. There are 500 plus videos on stabilizing your brain, mind, behavior, mental health, and well-being. We drop a new video every Friday. And I say that because these videos are helping hundreds of people and thousands of people change their lives. And in the video playlist, there's a video, if you type in the search bar, The Art of Wellness 2.0, It shares all of the 10 steps I utilize to stabilize mentally. I'll give you three of them. The three E's, I call them. Education, exercise, and eating healthily. Educating myself to my diagnosis and educating the people around me is really important so that they know how to treat me and how to take care of me when I can't take care of myself. Eating healthily is eating non-inflammatory foods that feed my body and my brain good food, because your gut biomes are directly connected to your brain chemistry. And if you're feeding yourself terribly non-nutritious foods, it's affecting your brain's functionality and your mental capacity. And exercising 3 to 5 times a week for 23 minutes a day leads to 12 hours of better mood. Who doesn't want that? That's from the University of Georgia. 23 minutes of rigorous exercise a day, 12 hours of better mood.
You
do that twice a day, you get 24 hours better mood.
So, Kevin, you mentioned education. So it's obvious, like, I needed to be educated, and you probably needed to be educated when you were young in school, and it's not in schools enough. I mean, it might be in a health class for a half hour, but why don't we have, and some do, and some will not, some schools will not have the courage to take on this curriculum, but you know, why don't we teach this so that when somebody feels different or knows that maybe they're suffering from depression rather than just kind of crazy, and, you know, these are symptoms of being a schizophrenic, or, you know, you don't come out of the bedroom. Parents don't know why is, like, Sally in the bedroom for 3 straight days and doesn't come out. Why isn't this in school? And if it was in school, do you think it would have helped you at all back in the day?
Oh, immensely. I'm the firm belief that one of the things New York is doing well is they are doing mental health training for youth, for kids, and starting 4th grade and up. And I agree with that. I've always agreed with that. I've always been a proponent for that. The youngest person to die by suicide in America was 4 years of age. And you think, how is that humanly possible? But it happened because they were being abused. If we can recognize that our children are smarter than we think they are and help them to learn social-emotional learning at a very young age, help them learn suicide prevention techniques and mental health awareness, and do it in a language they understand, in a way that they can comprehend. It's very important. It's actually crucial. We need to get this kind of education in the hands of our kids at a very young age so that they can be prevented from going down that route, which means that when they get to be suicidal, when they get older, they have tools to utilize and friends to talk to and family members to confide in, and they're not afraid. And they're not being judged. There's compassion being given to them.
Well, Kevin, we are really glad to hear that you are coming to town.
Heidi, we talked about this. Kevin, this is something when my daughter died. And, you know, of course, we did the obituary. We didn't know anything. We just talked about her life. We didn't say how she died as a result of suicide. And, Heidi, we were talking the other day about people who die from COVID. They don't necessarily put that in the obituary either because of the stigma attached to it. So we need to get to a point where somebody dies. Like if I was to go back in time, I would explain why my daughter died. And that's the stigma that's still just so fresh and tough. And are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. I just was wondering if your response to that, do you believe that we should start doing things more of that? Cause you see in the paper died unexpectedly or things like that.
You know, the fact is that being honest and open about it is really crucial for people to learn from the situation. So I think that, yes, I think that Heidi, it was not your fault. You didn't know that would have an effect. Mm-hmm. But I think moving forward, for people to understand, if they lose someone this way, be bold and be true about it, because you can be the one that sparks a conversation with another family that says, hey, to their sons and daughters, hey, I'm here for you. Tell them what's on your mind. Have you ever thought of killing yourself? You know? Is taking away that discrimination, that stigma, as you say, it's very important.
Kevin, it was great to talk to you today. Folks can find more information on Kevin and see those videos he talked about on YouTube, and we'll get people those links, and we look forward to seeing you in Grand Rapids on Monday. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care. See you soon.
Band seekers, value extractors, corrupt oligarchs, power snatchers, perverted incentives, bloody poops, nepotism.